Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty along with my brother Darren. Today in the show, we're going to be talking a little about soil sampling, but as always, we would be happy to take your phone call and talk about anything that's going on in your farm or answer any of your questions. Our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can also email us radio@agphd.com or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. Well, if you're looking for a little bit of humor today, you've come to the wrong place because we have a good time here and we're joking around and stuff like that. But I mean, we like to get serious about how do we make some more money on the farm. And Darren, to me, that's more fun than almost anything else when we are successful on the farm, when we're making some money, and then you can afford to stay in business for another few years.
Well, that's the bar that you have to set. You got to make some money, no doubt about that. Now, you don't have to make a ton of money all the time. It's not always about, well, I'll make way more money at this, but it's going to be at the cost of the long-term health of my fields or my farm. It's not about that at all. We do have to look at the long-term, and I get it. Sometimes you're making decisions. Like, for example, on our farm today, we're putting in some drainage tile. Is that going to pay off the first month we put it in? Nope. Is it going to pay off 6 months from now? Nope. We aren't even going to have a crop in there for another 6 or 7 months. So when is it going to start paying off? It'll start paying off year one, but it's going to start off and it's going to take a little while. It might take a few years for us to pay that tile off. But after that, the long-term health of our farm, awesome. Short-term economics, that stinks. We got to write a big check. Long-term economics, awesome. We like that. So there's a lot of choices like that that we make. So it's not always about, well, today would I make more money if I didn't put the tile in? Sure, but that's going to go away pretty quickly. We've got to make the right long-term choices too.
Okay, so when it comes to soil sampling, here's probably the number one thing that I want to talk to you about today. It's how exactly are you going to do that sampling in terms of the size of your grid or zone? How much soil in total are you going to represent with a sample? So first of all, let me just say this. We usually would suggest you would take 8 to 12 cores. So in other words, 8 to 12 samples. You mix that together or literally just throw it all in the bag, and most labs will blend it together for you so you don't have to screw around with that. We used to have to dump it in a 5-gallon bucket, stir it around, then send it in. You don't have to do that anymore. But anyway, the whole point is simply this. We want to make sure that we are representative of what's actually out in the field. And here's the number one mistake that we see done all the time, and it's called composite soil sampling. So if let's say you've got an 80-acre field and you go out to one spot and you pull soil samples, that would be one thing, okay? In effect, you've got a representative sample from one spot in the field. What a lot of guys will do, though, is over that whole 80 acres, they will take a bunch of soil cores around the 80 acres and blend it all together. That's also worthless data, okay? It's not going to help you at all because, in effect, now what you're going to do is you're going to over-fertilize half the ground, you're going to under-fertilize half the ground. You know, and it wouldn't make such a difference if fertilizer cost 10 cents and your crop was worth 10 cents. I mean, who cares? But here's the point. Like on our farm, we spend hundreds of thousands of dollars a year on fertilizer and our crop is worth millions of dollars. So, you know, even if let's say you aren't farming that many acres right now, I just want you to think about over the next 10 years, how many dollars worth of crop do you have? And over the next 10 years, how many dollars worth of fertilizer are you going to put out onto your field? If you just simply do a better job of soil sampling, now you have a much better idea what's actually truly out on your acres for fertility, and now you can better spend your money. That's really what we talk about all the time with soil sampling, soil testing, fertility in general. It's how do you spend those dollars in the best way possible to get a good return on investment, not just today, but to Darren's point, over the long run as well. Because take phosphorus, zinc, copper, even potassium in our soils, they are not going anywhere. So if you just get them in ratio with the other nutrients in the soil, so you get a good balance going into the plant, if you put on 2 years worth, guess what? It's all still going to be there with those non-mobile nutrients. So it's an investment, not just for this year, but for next year as well. But that's also why you've got to do the right thing for soil sampling, because otherwise you might put on 2 years worth of fertilizer that really is a half year's worth, or really is 8 years worth. We don't know until we find out exactly what's on each acre.
It's so eye-opening to get into those smaller grids, and I get it. You think, well, I've done it this way for a while, and I'm doing okay on the farm, and my yields are okay. Yes, that may be all true, and you may be making money, and everything may be just fine. But there is a lot of loss. There's a lot of waste there where, you know what, I could use the same amount of fertilizer and spread it a little bit different out there and get even more yield. Why would you not do that? It just seems crazy to me that you wouldn't consider that. And I know that sometimes it means, well, I may have to change a few things. I may have to do variable rate, and I've never done that before. I understand. We were in the same boat just a few years ago. We had never done it before. And so we started doing variable rate, and wow, it's really been a good thing. And we've seen a big time difference for our return on investment. It's been much better. And you know what? I hope you're not in an area of the country that the regulations are getting worse and worse and worse very fast, and they're limiting certain nutrients that you're putting out in the field. But we need to be smart about things too, about what we're putting out there, especially with some of the leachable nutrients and nutrients that could be at risk. So we want to make sure we're placing them perfectly.
Okay, let's talk about soil sampling techniques. These are the three things you've got to know. Number one, when you sample, your probe always needs to go straight up and down. Okay, straight up and down so you get a representative sample. Then make a mark on your probe so you know exactly the depth you're going to, and always go to the same depth. Okay, whether it's 6 inches, 8 inches, 12 inches, whatever you decide, just pick a depth. Always stay with that. The third thing is we always want you going to GPS points, and then walk out of your vehicle, step out of your vehicle, pull 2 to 3 cores on each side of the vehicle, throw it all together, done. Okay, do not wander aimlessly about 1 acre, 5 acres, 20 acres. Go to a GPS spot, sample right around the vehicle. That's what exactly how you do it. So anyway, we'll talk more about soil sampling as Ag PhD continues.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
When it comes to leading herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. Nufarm brings you Cheetah, a high-quality glufosinate herbicide made right here in the USA. Now for use on a wide variety of crops with glufosinate-resistant traits, including Enlist crops. Its novel mode of action will manage existing or emerging herbicide resistance and provide fast, effective results. This means you can focus more on profitability and less on weeds. Nufarm and Cheetah Herbicide, here to help.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us. We're talking about soil sampling on today's program, and we'd love to hear from you. If you have an agronomic question, if you want to talk about what's going on your farm, if you want to talk about soil sampling, get some ideas for what you're doing, or share some ideas that you've got for our listeners, we'd love to hear from you. 844 44AgPhD, or you can email us radio@agphd.com. Start off in Kentucky. We've got Jed with us right now. Jed, how's harvest going down in Kentucky?
Oh, we're wide open. You know, corn, we're about halfway through our corn crop, and then just started down some beans here the last couple days. I had to run some earlier beans, which turned out well.
Awesome. Awesome. You know, we're getting rolling here, too. We're taking some beans out today. We're doing some drainage tile work. It's just a crazy time. You got other projects that you're working on at the same time that you're trying to get harvest done, too?
Well, as I say, it's the most wonderful time of the year. So, you know, we're doing that. And, of course, we grow tobacco as well. So we're always, you know, working with harvesting the tobacco. Then you look at your lime and what you need to do as far as your fall applications on your soil sampling and your fertilizer.
Yeah, the soil sampling thing for our farm, I know we're in a good spot where we've got plenty of help, but a lot of people that we talk to across the farming region say, man, help is the toughest thing to get. Have you got a stable crew that you always have every year? Or are you always adding a few people here or there as you can or as those opportunities allow?
Well, we've been fortunate enough to have, what I would call the required amount of help here the last couple of years of full-time people that have helped us on the farm. But it is harder for us to find the part-time people to come in and drive the trucks this time of year, the seasonal work, I guess would be the best term for it. It seems it's harder than it has been in the past to find those workers.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year, 2020, no doubt about that. We're fighting through those battles all the time. So talk to us about the soil sampling. As we get rolling on that, do you have a strategy that you always use, or are you kind of adapting based on year and based on field? How do you guys do it?
Well, you know, in the past, we have done a rotation on the soil sampling, which, you know, it turned out to be worked pretty well on different farms. But, you know, with the amount of yields we're building off these farms now, I like to do it more at least, this may go against y'all's rates, but at least every other year I like to have to know what my soil is doing. So that's kind of the rotation we've been in for the last 4 years on soil sampling, and it's kind of what we've stuck with here. So just maintain our pHs when we're variable rating our lime. It seems like we can up the rects more, but I'm still using a lot of lime in my operation and having to come back. When I change the net 2 years later, I may be deficient in other areas.
Yeah, it gets to be a challenge just to get it all done. And I think that ends up playing into this too, because I know for our firm, we'd love to sample every acre every year, and we think we can get a return on investment doing that. But the problem is, how are you going to get all that work done? And for a lot of farms we talk to, they're like, man, if I get around every third year or every fourth year, that's about all I can get done. So I think you're pretty aggressive there, Jed, if you can get it all done every other year.
We do contract part of it out because it is hard to do. And as you mentioned earlier, with everything you have going on, drainage tile, other things, it's hard to get all that accomplished in the short window that we have.
The lime is one that really was a game changer for us. We went to smaller grids as soon as we realized how much liming we needed to do and where we needed to put that. Does that really dictate for you, too, that you need to be a little smaller grid size?
Yes, it does, and just the frequency, as I mentioned earlier. You know, lime was probably the first, you always soil sample for lime. Then we started adding micronutrients and everything else we were looking at in the soil sample to that. But I would say when we first started, you know, variable rate technology from soil sampling was basically for the lime in our area. And it's been very beneficial to our budgets.
Yeah, it just makes a difference. And I know for a lot of folks listening, they're like, man, I don't know how to interpret all this data on the soil test. And one that I would say everyone would say, okay, I can interpret pH. And I know when it's way down in the fives or worse, I know I've got to get after it with lime. And that is one. And if that helps everyone move their programs forward and getting a little more fussy on soil sampling, I think that's a big plus. Jed, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you. I know it's a super busy time of year. Good luck to you and stay safe out there.
Have a safe harvest yourself.
You bet.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks. Let's head down to Texas. Sean had a question about water sampling along with the soil sampling. Hey, Sean, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good.
Yeah, I just had a question. So we've got a property that I'm working with, and they're thinking about, they have a couple of 50-acre fields that are coastal, and we've been interseeding with, you know, weed oats and some winter peas to for cattle grazing and also for wildlife. And then also planting a spring, no-tilling in some spring food plots into that area. And so we're thinking about doing, putting a pivot on each of them just to, when we are in the droughtier times to be able to, you know, enhance our grazing production and take pressure off the native pastures.
Sure.
So, you know, I mean, putting in a new pivot is, you know, expensive, so we just want to make sure it's worth the expense, you know, that our water quality is good. And then on those 50-acre plots, I know more is better, but what would be the minimum amount of soil samples would you take on a field that size?
You know, that's a great question. And if you're thinking about just, I want to put enough plant food out there to get enough good grazing and get the food plots going where you want them, so there's lots there for wildlife and so forth. You know, you can budget however you want to. We do a lot of 1-acre grids just from the standpoint of we know we're going to have to lime in some spots, and so that's obviously the most expensive. 2.5-acre grids is getting to be pretty common, and it's an investment, but it's not ridiculous. And I would say 5-acre grids are even more common. So yeah, on 50-acre fields, if you did, you could do something like we did, pull 10-acre samples, which would be 5 samples total on a 50-acre field, and then split those down where you pull them in 2.5 acres and just see what happens. See if you notice some big differences out there. And if you did, then you know it's worth going further, and then you could do the same thing on the other piece of ground. But if you just said, Darren, I just need a number, just tell me what to do, I'd say, well, pull 2.5-acre grids. I think you'll learn a lot off those. And then, yeah, the water sample, is there a well there that you would just have to add to, or you'd have to drill new wells?
No, we have 3 wells already existing.
Oh, okay, perfect. Yep, so you could pull water samples out of those, and that does what we've seen is, and we aren't irrigators here on our farm, we're dryland farmers, but what we've seen with the samples coming through and just what we've learned in the industry, there is some variance through the season as to where that water quality is going to be, and not necessarily it's going to be terrible at any point, but just it does vary a little bit throughout the season. So you may pull samples now and do some testing and compare those against samples in the spring versus the middle of the summer.
Okay. Any big things, you know, like, is anything in the water going to be tying up, nutrients in the soil that really need to be concerned about?
You know, the thing I look at is what's that water pH, and then how much bad stuff is in there. And mainly, a lot of times we'll see some sodium in there, those kinds of things. But if it's good water, then you aren't going to have to worry about too much. But if it's, say it's a 9 pH or something crazy, which I highly doubt, but just say that it is, if you're spreading a 9 pH out thousands of gallons at a time on your soil, it's eventually going to make your pH go up. So that'd be my concern is just do a complete water analysis for it and just see what there is. And yeah, if something's way out of whack, maybe at a different depth, maybe you're able to go deeper and get out of that. Or like I say, if you get 3 wells, maybe there's one that's a better source than the others.
Okay. 10-4, appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks a lot, Sean. Really appreciate the call today. Talking about soil sampling on Ag PhD Radio. Stay tuned.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
I'll take predictability where I can get it.
With their CropWise Seed Selector, NK Seeds combines local knowledge and local data to show me where their seed fits.
And even where it doesn't. Because out here, predictability is hard to come by. And success matters. Find your seed at nkseeds.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at SoilWarrior.com.
As a little girl, I always wanted to run the combine because it meant I was helping Dad. And Dad always said, farmers are helpers. I'm teaching that to my daughters, that farmers help our family, our neighbors, and our community. It's what I do at work. I help farmers get the equipment they need. My name is Kim. I'm a farmer, and I work for Case IH.
Case IH, built by farmers.
Pentair Hypro Ultra Low Drift Nozzles are your ideal choice for the Enlist E3 herbicide system. With coverage comparable to flat fans and with 90% less drift, ULD nozzles meet all required standards for Enlist applications and provide optimal performance of contact herbicides. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Make every bushel count with the End Zone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shatter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. Condition your grain for ideal moisture with the End Zone. Visit farmshopmfg.com for more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about soil sampling. And if you're not super excited about soil sampling, it may be because you're the one pulling the samples, because it is a little bit of work. But man, the data is so helpful in determining how you're going to invest literally thousands and thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, on your farm. Real happy to have Neil Sass with us right now, a state soil scientist for Iowa. Neil, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate having you on.
Thanks, Darren. Appreciate the opportunity.
All right, so we're talking about soil sampling today. Obviously, a good percentage of the acres in Iowa are farm ground, and a lot of farmers out there pulling soil samples. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you help if you had a new farmer in Iowa who called you up and said, all right, I just got this farm, I need to start my soil sampling program, and I'm starting from scratch. What should I know and what should I do?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's several ways to approach it. The standard sort of chemical analysis that we've done for years is a great one and certainly one to look at, but there's also, you know, physical and biological properties of soil that should be considered as well.
Okay, great. I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm thinking about nutrients and looking at a soil test and trying to determine what I'm going to put out for fertilizer for the year. Talk to us through some of the physical things, because I know we've come out of, there's been some interesting weather the last few years, from extreme wet to extreme drought in parts of the state of Iowa. And I'm not sure, how did Northeast Iowa fare this year? You guys have caught at least some rain, correct?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, it was nice and dry early and got the crops in pretty well, and then got some rain, and then it got even drier there for a while. So, You know, folks were really noticing water holding capacity differences in their soil, you know, which is a physical thing based on soil texture and also organic matter. So, you know, those are two of many things that you'd want to look at in your soil when you're doing your sampling.
You know, when we have an extreme drought versus a very wet year, obviously it changes a lot of things out in the field, and that impacts everything from the kind of yield you're going to raise, but also the biological component of that soil. If you've got drought, that's not good for soil biology either. So some of the farmers in your state are faced with that going into the fall here. Is there something they could do to try to help out the biology in the soil?
Sure. So, you know, the biology is a living thing just like we are and needs a good habitat to live in. So leaving the soil structure intact and keeping a nice residue layer on top of the soil surface will help eliminate some of those wild temperature fluctuations and moisture, you know, differences that can happen associated with temperature. So leaving the residue on the surface will help, you know, make a nice living quarters for biology to have.
I know we talk to more farmers each year talking about cover crops, and that certainly plays into what you're talking about here, leaving that soil intact, leaving a living host out there as long as possible to try to encourage that biology.
Yeah, that's right. You know, ancient civilizations called the plant the mouth of the soil. So if it's not being fed, if your soil's not being fed for longer than just the cropping season, it's going to get hungry.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, so talk about the hunger and the nutrients. There's a lot of farmers in Iowa that are going to be putting out manure later this fall. There's certainly plenty of commercial fertilizer available throughout the state, and in some parts of the state, big yields coming off again even this year. So replenishing those nutrients, how often should we be pulling that chemical analysis to see where we're at for nutrient levels? And then we were talking just a little bit ago before the break about, well, how small of grids do I need to be on? There's a lot to know there.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, you know, knowing where you're at is of course important. I think at least once in your rotation, you should be pulling soil samples no more than every 4 years, you know, maybe once every 2 years, would be a good goal to shoot for. And then as far as your sampling sizes or your zones or your grids, you know, I see a little bit of both, you know, as far as grids versus zones. You know, it kind of depends on your farm and your fields, and you sort of know what sort of variability may or may not be there. You know, if you're trying to decide between zones or grids, grids, I guess, I see a lot of, you know, 2.5 acre sizes would be a pretty average, you know, size that I see.
Yeah, I'd agree. We get a lot of soil samples sent in each week here to our show, just looking for another opinion on what they could do or where they would best invest their money. And you're right. There's a lot of them that are coming in now that are 2.5 acre grid seems to be probably the most popular one. You know, as you're measuring that too, we've been talking about nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium for years and years, getting a lot more growers asking about sulfur and asking about micronutrients specifically. Is that the kind of questions you're getting in Iowa as well?
You know, I'm probably not the agronomic source, you know, that others are, but just glancing over the lab results that I see, you know, and sulfur is one that seems to be popping up a lot more frequently than it used to be. You know, sometimes with some pretty low values as well. So that's the one I guess I would, you know, mention.
Yeah, that I would say that too. This fall, that's one of the comments I've been hearing a lot. I work more on the western side of Iowa. I know you're more focused on the east side of Iowa. At least that's what I understand, Neil, if I'm correct. And I know on the west side of Iowa, they're definitely talking sulfur over this way.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm northeast, so I guess I would agree.
How about the manure aspect of this? I know in Iowa, a lot of people talk about, boy, Iowa's got a lot of access to manure, a lot of cattle, a lot of hogs, a lot of poultry across the state. How does that play into this? Because I think about it not only as we're putting nutrients out, but there's certainly biology there. There's certainly organic matter there. A lot of different things involved with a manure application.
Yeah, sure is. Yeah. You know, getting a good manure analysis. You know, if it's a new manure source for you, getting familiar with the analysis. You know, as you go through the years and it stays fairly consistent, you know, you really get a good handle on it there, which is great, you know, for figuring out your nutrient needs. But as far as organic matter, you know, there's a wide range in the quality, I guess, as far as organic matter goes of manure sources. You know, solid manures or bed pack type things certainly have more carbon in them than liquid manures do. And are much better sources for soil biology and increasing soil carbon as well.
You know, I wrote this down too. I wrote down just a few notes about, oh, here's some things I want to talk to Neil about. And the one that I hadn't gotten to was nitrogen. I'm like, man, I can't believe I didn't ask that first. But talk to us a little about nitrogen. I know there's always questions about, all right, what's going on in the state of Iowa and what's going to happen or what's going to change with how farmers are going to be applying nitrogen. What are you seeing as a state soil scientist with nitrogen? Is it a big concern in the state of Iowa and what's happening there?
Yeah, you know, nitrogen is a hot topic, you know, and I guess sort of started talking about water holding capacity of soils and how texture and organic matter come in there, you know, and the more of those you have, the better you're going to be able to hold on to your nitrogen, you know, and less concerned you are about losses. You know, there's such a wide range in soil types and on each different farm. But, you know, hopefully we get some more normal weather patterns here. We have less worries about losses due to heavy spring rains and things like that. So we can, you know, really, really reduce any input losses that we may have.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I, you know, for any of our listeners who haven't been to the state of Iowa, you may hear Iowa come up and say, ah, those guys, all the soils there are great and everything is nice and flat and easy. No, there's some pretty hilly areas to the state of Iowa. There's some very light soils. There's a lot of potential for erosion and loss, and farmers have to do a really good job, just like everywhere, to make sure we're managing soils well. And real happy to have Neil Sass with us, a state soil scientist in Northeast Iowa. Neil, thank you so much. Really appreciate you being generous with your time today, and good luck to you here this fall.
Thanks a bunch, Darren. Appreciate it too.
You bet. Talking about soil sampling on our show today, but also taking your calls and agronomic questions. If you've got something going on in the field and you want to talk about it or want to ask a question, we would love to help. 844-44-AG-PHD is our number. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, Adam, new drone?
Not just any drone. I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree. In the power lines!
Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Vasgro brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Vasgro leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shutter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. With the Endzone, you can combine higher moisture beans earlier in the season to reduce field loss, then use your bin fans to naturally reach your target moisture. Condition your grain for maximum profit with the Endzone. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from Sipcam Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
Got resistant weeds? Add Tough 5EC as your post-emergence tank mix partner to deliver the knockout punch to Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Tough 5EC is a selective contact herbicide for post-emergence control of key broadleaf weeds, especially resistant strains. Tough 5EC is manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, an agrochemical company focused on providing innovative products with strong technical support. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltrumUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
What's the next big thing from the Roundup Ready Extend crop system? A soybean built on Roundup Ready to Extend technology, or one with glufosinate tolerance? Great news, it's both. Expected soon. Extend Flex Soybeans. Always read and follow IRM where applicable. Grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Commercial availability in 2021 is dependent on regulatory approval. No dicamba may be used in crop with Extend Flex Soybeans unless and until approved. And no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com.
Talking about soil sampling on today's Ag PhD radio program and taking your calls and agronomic questions too at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head down to North Carolina, get Russell with us right now. Thanks for joining us, Russell.
Thanks, Darren. I appreciate it.
So how are things going down on your farm?
We've been wet pretty much all the last part of the season, just finally starting to dry out. Everybody's getting into harvest time, and, you know, that's the fun time of the year.
Yeah, it sure is to see. Well, number one, you get a paycheck because you actually have some grain that you can sell. That's the tough thing. I really honestly don't think people that aren't involved with farm operations get that. We do all this work, make all this investment, hoping there'll be a paycheck there in the end. It's not guaranteed.
No, it never is, but you just got to have faith and keep farming.
You know, as you look at it, you said you're wet late season, and we had that situation in 2018 and 2019 where we were wet late, and we were worried about making ruts out in the field and leaving problems we'd have to deal with for at least another year, if not longer. Are you that wet? Are you in that shape too?
No, we're not that bad this year. 2018, we had two hurricanes, about 100 inches of rain, and we definitely left ruts in the field. You know, we'll pick up an inch or two of rain in the beginning of the week, and then, you know, middle to the end of the week, we're able to get out there, and the ground's dried out enough that, you know, you might leave some tire studs, but you're not messing anything up.
You know, we get a wet year on our farm. I know it really messes things up for us too, in that, wow, we had some fertility work we wanted to get done, or we had some drainage work we wanted to get done, or we definitely have soil sampling we want to get done, and that just gets harder and harder if the season gets late. Are you in jeopardy of that, or you still have plenty of time for everything where you're at?
No, we've still got plenty of time for that. We're, you know, as we're harvesting, we're pulling our fall samples and trying to get that work done. So we're not behind right now, so it's working out pretty well.
All right, so talk to us a little bit about the soil sampling that you do. Are you testing for nutrients? Are you testing for soil health? What are you doing on your operation?
So when we first started farming, we used a typical Mealic 3. That's what our university uses here in our local state. And Ray Archuleta told me about this this crazy scientist named Rick Haney. And I don't know if you're familiar with Rick, but they came out with a new test well before I started farming, and it actually reads soil fertility. We're looking at soil biology levels through a CO2 respiration rate. And one of the cool things for me, and it's kind of been a buzzword here lately, is it's actually been a way for us to monitor how much carbon we're actually putting into the soil system. It's not a total carbon read, but it's the water available carbon that's available to the biology, so we know how much quote-unquote food we're putting in the ground for the biology to consume. So that's one of the tests that we're running on our farm, and it took us a couple years to get it across to all our acres, but it's worked out really reliable for us.
All right, so let's talk about that just a little bit, because here's the thing. We can measure how much N, P, and K and other nutrients we've got out in the soil, and that's great, and it's important, and we'll talk plenty about that on our show. But when it comes to the biology, one of the things that a lot of our listeners have expressed is, man, I'm all in on this, and I get it that a healthy soil is really going to help me out there getting yield and accessing nutrients and making everything work in my field, but I don't know how to measure it, and I don't know what I'm looking for. So you've been doing this now for a little while, Russell. Talk to us about that. How do we measure it, and do you see a big difference between your new ground that you're just getting and just trying to get into shape compared to your ground you've had for a while?
So when we first started farming, I'll actually say that I watched a ton of Ag PhD YouTube videos. I heard you and Brian talk about farmers don't even take the credit normally for organic matter breakdown, you know, the 20 to 25 pounds of nitrogen that could come from that source. And when I started talking to Rick, you know, we were pulling, you know, PSNTs, pre-soil nitrate samples, and sending those off to the lab, and that only gives us one form of nitrogen.
Sure.
And when I started talking to Rick, his test actually looks for the organic and inorganic. So there's about 23 different forms of nitrogen that we now know are plant available that Rick's test uses 9 different ways to actually test for that nitrogen. One of those ways is the CO2 burst, which the Germans found. I think it might have been the Germans back in the early 1900s wrote a book on it. And when the biology in the ground consumes and breaks down organic material, there's this CO2 spike. And Rick actually developed a way to read that CO2 spike, and we can actually look at how much mineralization we're getting from soil biology through a correlation of how big that spike is. So looking at how much carbon we have in the ground, how large that CO2 spike is. I call those the quote-unquote biological indicators of Rick's test. And sure. Then Rick is also looking at the full nitrogen pool of organic and inorganic. In our ground that we pick up that is, you know, I would call a degraded system, you know, we might see 20 pounds of nitrogen to the acre that we can save as farmers, but that's still an easy $10 per acre. As we've increased organic matter and we've increased biology and we're introducing, you know, reduced tillage, where we're either doing no-till, we don't, you know, really have land for strip till, I think like you and Brian do, but, you know, as we see these increases, we also see increases in the organic forms of nitrogen. So typically on our farm, we're saving anywhere from about 75 to 120 pounds of nitrogen that we've been able to cut back per acre. And through our check strips and things that we do with the local university, we're not sacrificing yield. I'm not saying corn doesn't need that nitrogen, but it's coming from a healthy soil standpoint versus
sure.
an NPK applying fertilizer. And that's tremendous for the bottom line.
Oh, it's awesome. It's great for the environment as well. If you can, like you say, have a soil that's going to break things down and produce and release free nutrients, that's how the system's designed to work. We just are pushing yields, and we're pushing with all these agronomic practices that we're doing, and we've got to fill in the gaps. And like you say, if we adjust some of the other things that we're doing, maybe we can take advantage of nature even a little bit more so and utilize organic nitrogen coming free.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a new test to a lot of producers. They haven't heard about it yet. Rick's got a lab down in Temple, Texas that they run samples. And I've got another friend at a Regen Ag Lab in Nebraska. We send our samples to Lance Gunderson as well. And those are the two places we get them. They're very comprehensive tests. And typically when I talk to farmers, in their first year of using this test, or even the first couple, I still like to see them pull, you know, whether it be a Bray or an Olson, whether you use a Malic, still pull your regular sample and then pull a sample for this Haney test. And that way you can kind of get a feel and a read for what you're going to see difference in these tests.
All right. So when you're doing the additional testing, like you say, there's a great way to take a look at what's going on with biology, certainly to monitor what's happening with carbon in the soil. That one is really getting a lot of attention. Farmers are starting to pay attention to this carbon thing. And what do you see coming down the road? Because knowing how you're building carbon up there, if we have a market for carbon and the world governments continue to head that direction, that could be a profit center for us too.
Absolutely. There's already a couple companies in the industry that have a carbon marketplace. I think it's kind of in the infancy stage that they're starting up with. But, you know, just to give an example, some of our baseline Haney samples that we took, you know, 6-7 years ago, we were about 80 parts per million. Now we've got ground that we're seeing 400 and 500 parts per million as these soils really ramp up with biology and the amount of organic matter that we're actually pulling down into profile with biology. So I definitely think it's a way for farmers to map what they could potentially do in their area and get paid. I think, you know, the average marketplace right now is about $25 a ton. You know, for what we've seen on our farm, 2 tons to the acre is not out of the you know, realm of possibility. So that could be an additional, you know, $25 to $50 an acre in income.
Wow.
That farmers could generate coming into the future.
Yeah, that would be certainly a game changer. And you just can't manage these things if you aren't measuring them and seeing what kind of difference agronomic practices are making and everything that you're doing on the farm. We're talking with Russell down in North Carolina. Russell, thank you so much. You've been generous with your time. I know it's a busy time of year for you. Thanks for all the information and good luck to you this fall.
All right. Thanks, Darren. Have a good show.
You bet. Talking about soil sampling on today's Ag PhD radio program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
A history of success means proven performance. But let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support. Let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's AGBIOME.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you, to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Revitec fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Talking about soil sampling, there's certainly a lot of different things to be concerned about. One of the things we haven't talked about yet is just The difference in strip till versus conventional till, no till, that kind of thing. And there's a lot of farming practices here that could determine how you're going to be doing the fertilizer, how you're going to be measuring that out in your soil. We've got Jim with us right now up in Ontario with one of those kinds of questions about strip till and broadcast fertilizer and how it all plays together. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Darren. How are you?
Good, good. I got Brian in here too, and we do some strip till on our farm. We definitely do some broadcast fertilizer. We do some banding. How are you doing the strip till up there?
Well, I had a neighbor strip till some wheat stubble, and I planted no-till oats into a strip till, and I'll go in next spring with corn, and I usually go 2 year beans and a year of wheat and then back to corn. So the second year beans, sometimes I usually lay down fertilizer and tickle it with the cultivator. But my concern is I'm going to benefit on the corn, but my beans and wheat might suffer because the fertilizer is in a strip.
Okay.
And I go 7.5-inch rows with my beans and wheat both.
Yeah, so this is a common question that we get, Jim, for guys that are doing rows, like 30-inch rows in corn, and then drilling in their beans and or wheat. So what we normally would suggest is if you want to fertilize for the corn with the strip till, then you just go ahead and put enough out there just for the corn. So look at how much am I going to remove just with the grain, with the corn, and then fertilize accordingly with that. And so we've done this for years on our own farm. Then you're going to have to, with the beans and wheat, take a look at broadcasting the fertilizer there. So it would be a little bit different if, let's just say, you were doing this 2 years of corn, and the first year you were in 30-inch rows. The second year you moved over 15 inches, and you were on a build program both years, so you left a little extra fertilizer every 15 inches across the field. Then it's not that big a deal. But yeah, if you were going to leave extra fertilizer every 30 inches, you would see wavy beans and wavy wheat. We have seen that before.
Well, I agree with you, and I've heard you say if you just dump fertilizer on a field and don't work it in, we're wasting our money. So,
well, not
yeah, almost when I go in the second year beans,
yep,
I feel like I got to cultivate that fertilizer in.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily wasting your money. It's just that you're not going to get a very fast return on your money. It's going to sit there for a long, long time before you extract all of it. And it all depends on how long you want that payback to be. If you don't mind the payback being 5, 10, 15 years, no big deal. But yes, if you'd like to recover that fertilizer in the next few years, you've got to get it down into the soil somehow, some way, when it is one of the non-mobile nutrients. So phosphorus, up in your country, I would even consider potassium in that group. Zinc, definitely. Copper, definitely. So with those nutrients, those are the ones we want to get down in the ground. If it's something leachable, like nitrate, sulfate, boron, for example, no big deal. You can put those on the soil surface, and those definitely you can broadcast in a lot of different cases. Doesn't really matter. Where we gain most on banding, like for corn when we're in 30-inch rows, is on those non-mobile nutrients, phosphorus, to some degree potassium, zinc, and copper. Those would be the ones that I would think of first.
Yeah, I put down half MAP and half potash.
Yep.
And then next spring I'm going in with dry with the planter, and I'll put more fertilizer with my micros.
Okay.
So my corn will have lots. I guess the micros move somewhat.
Depends on which one. So boron, for example, will move just fine. Zinc and copper do not. Zinc and copper are very immobile in the soil, just like phosphorus.
Okay. Well, I'm just experimenting with the strip till and
sure.
Give it a try. So
you bet.
I'll see what happens.
Okay, sounds good. Well, let us know how you turn out there, Jim.
Thanks, Darren. Right on.
All right, appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
I got a number of questions here that came into the Ag PhD mailbag. Let's dive into those.
It's the mailbag.
Okay, this is from Matt, and he said, I want you to discuss the advantages and disadvantages of grid sampling versus zones. We used to do 2.5 acre grids. Then we started working with a company that did zones. We're kind of thinking we had a better idea than the zones with our grids, but we don't want to keep switching back and forth. We're going to pick one method and stick to it. What do you think we should do? What are the advantages, disadvantages?
Well, let's put it this way. If you go with an average size of 2.5 acre zones versus 2.5 acre grids, I'll take the zones. It's just much harder to set that up. So if you want something simple to set up and you want it to be 2.5 acres, then grids are a pretty good way to go. Because again, it's just very, very simple. I would tell you this, though, and I talk about this all the time, like with lime and the mistakes that we've made on our own farm. When you have a lot of variability out in your soil, like we have on our farm, when the bigger the grid size, the more errors you're going to have. And even if you just one time do 1 acre grids, before you're going to lime or before you're going to spend a whole bunch of money on fertilizer, one time, that gives you the opportunity to kind of even things out. And then you can go back to 2.5 acre grids or 5 acre grids, something like that. I don't mind the switching back and forth a lot, other than it's really hard to track. So if all you're going to do is, hey, I just want to fertilize for this year, I'm not worried about the past history, anything else, then who cares what size you're on? Or if you go grid, zone, whatever, it's no big deal. But if you're curious as to how am I doing over a course of time, am I building the soil, am I depleting the soil, is my pH going down, is it going up, then it's nice to be on the same grid or zone size and pulling in the same spots. Also, like I said earlier in the show, I don't care if you're in grids or zones. I always want you to pick a GPS point in that grid or in that zone. You go right to that GPS point. You step out of the vehicle, and it's up to you what you're going to do. I would do 2 cores on each side. I think Darren's a big believer in 3 cores on each side, because the point is you're going to do 8 to 12 cores. And the reason why we want to be at that GPS point is because now it's repeatable. Now we can go back there 50 years from now even, and we're in the exact same spot. That's what we want to do. That's how you soil test. You do not randomly go about that grid or zone and just pull a whole bunch of cores, because you have zero repeatability that way. So always pick a GPS point.
All right, another question.
The
other part of Matt's question was just green snap and corn. There are a few things that you could do. What would you suggest? They lost 100 bushels an acre on an area that got hit hard. Just wondering what they could do.
You know, Soil test and send us the results, and we'll tell you better what you can do. A lot of times it's not enough potassium. It could also be copper and manganese, but it's most of the time potassium or too high a population. Now, I would also throw in there, if you have poor drainage, so your roots didn't get down and get established, so you got a nice solid base, that could have been part of the problem too. But yes, we've all dealt with green snap before. We're all trying to reduce it, but potassium's number one. Lowering your planting population's number two.
Yep, and then plant multiple hybrids too to spread your risk out.
Absolutely.
Bobby from Indiana called in. Just was wondering if we could explain a little bit what we mean by strip till. That term was a little confusing.
Yeah, so let's just say in corn, I'm on 30-inch rows. You come up with a system that will do a little bit of tillage 7 to 10 inches wide right over where you're going to plant those rows. Most of the time when people are doing strip till, so in other words, that's basically 10 inches of tillage, 20 inches of no-till. So you kind of get the best of both worlds with the strip till, or with the conventional till and no-till. Conventional till, the best part is I can place my fertility deeper and I have warmer soil. And the best part, and I have a better seed bed. And the best part about no-till is I am building soil organic matter. I am reducing runoff, reducing erosion out there. And I maybe can get a little better infiltration there too over time, better microbial life as well. So anyway, yeah, it's strips that we're doing of tillage out in that field, and it all depends on the row spacing that the farmer's going to plant in. If he's in 30-inch rows, he'll do strips right over those 30-inch rows.
Thanks for the question, Bobby. Thanks for listening to the show, too. Yeah, there are a lot of terms that we use here, especially if you're not a farmer or you farm in a different area. They may be a little foreign to you, so glad you asked the question. Thanks for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.